It is Way of the Warrior, episode 310, a special surprise for you all as Ken Evans makes his triumphant return. If you're listening on Friday when we're doing this, you can catch him on ESPN 961 this afternoon as he breaks down all of the fights from UFC 196. So without further ado, we jump in to the insanity that is the Conor McGregor show at UFC 196 and everything else. It is Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show.
Yeah. Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
And it's all over!
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground, and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Hultgren, along with Ken Evans, talking everything in the world of mixed martial arts. And since it's a special weekend, we were able to find Ken and bring him back to the show. So welcome back, first of all.
I didn't know you were doing them without me. I don't.
I don't listen to the show.
Right.
How many did you do?
Right. You were doing shows? Was there MMA? I don't think there was MMA until Anderson Silva came back to the cage.
There was not MMA until people joined Fight Pass en masse.
Yes.
We will talk about Anderson and Michael Bisping. I will get your thoughts on that, especially the third round, because there's lots to tear apart there. We'll talk a little bit about Lorenzo Fertitta, talking about how the UFC will be in the Olympics, but we would be remiss if we didn't start talking about UFC 196, which is this weekend. Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz, who's clearly down a wrist at this point.
Down a what?
A wrist, because it looks like Conor slapped his wrist at the presser.
Oh, yeah, they got into a little scrummy thing.
And as we are talking on Twitter, there are a whole bunch of screen caps that it appears that Nate Diaz is holding his wrist after that fracas.
Well, I mean, you know, Chael Sonnen ate a shoulder to the face, you know, with that weigh-in.
It was the weigh-in with Anderson.
Yeah, with Anderson. So, I mean, if he can do that, like, calm down, Nate.
I'm with you. Indeed. So this is what we have. Conor McGregor, Nate Diaz at 170. Your thoughts on what's going to happen tomorrow night?
I have no idea what's going to happen tomorrow night, because this is unheard of in the UFC. You've got a champion at featherweight, so who's at 145, was going to do something unheard of as it was, which was take on Rafael Dos Anjos. He was going to fight the guy at 155, and he called him the bum version of Jose Aldo. And said, this won't even be a contest. I at least had respect for Jose Aldo. This is the bum version of Jose Aldo, and he's fatter, and he weighs 155. That's essentially what Conor McGregor has been saying
right
as we lead up to the fight. So we find out not even 10 days ago that Rafael was out of the fight. Conor called it a little foot bruise and said he wanted another fight. So there was back and forth. Nate apparently got on the phone. There's a lot of argument as to who set what weight. Did you watch yesterday's press conference?
I did, yes. And I don't know why this is still the
thing. Why are you disappointed? This is amazing.
Well, no, I'm not disappointed. I've been spending some time playing around on Anchor, and lots of the people on Anchor have the same feeling I do, which is...
Do you make these apps up? I don't even know what you're on.
It's a really cool audio
app.
I try
to tweet you, and apparently you're over here in things to Matt Damon on Mars. Like, it's and Matt Damon and some guys at NASA, and we were talking about the MMAs
but it's interesting because everybody kind of universally is bummed that we only get 8 days of this insanity. That if this was
but that's good, though, because we keep losing fighters. And you know what? As much as Conor's talked and as much as Conor makes fun of dudes and it's all about selling the fight, we're getting to a certain point where these guys do keep pulling out of the fight. And you've got a guy there who shows up and he's fighting. He's headlined 3 pay-per-views for the UFC in a year where we weren't sure how the UFC was going to do. Remember going into 2015? I mean, we knew Conor McGregor was something. We weren't sure exactly what, if he would be able to win that title. Let's not forget that Chad Mendes fight, he was almost universally picked against, including myself, in that fight. Like, okay, this is going to be the wake-up call. UFC made $600 million last year. That was 2 people that helped them do that, essentially. Ronda Rousey and Conor McGregor. And this was a year that they were going into with Jon Jones. God knows if he's going to be in jail, if he's coming back or not. Anderson right. Silva's on a drug suspension. Oh, Nick Diaz, they tried to shoot him into the sun at the NSAC hearings. Like, oh, I don't know, you did some weed, how about 5 years? So the UFC is dealing with a lot of, like, their high profile guys out of the company, essentially, at that point. They can't make a heavyweight fight to save their life without somebody getting hurt, and nobody knew what was happening. And all of a sudden, you've got Conor McGregor stepping up. He'll take on Chad Mendes on short notice. He'll take on Rafael Dos Anjos after he wins the title and beats Jose Aldo. So this is a guy who stepped up over and over and over again. you know, it's a guy who at this point I'm starting to respect a lot more. Not that I didn't respect him, but some of the selling of the fight can rub people the wrong way, and
yep.
I understand that.
Yeah.
At a certain point, the guy's backing it all up. Like, I have a lot. This is how bad it is as far as, or how much maybe I'm starting to believe the hype, but it's not hype. He's backing it up. I don't think I'm picking against the dude who's jumping up 35 pounds, essentially. I mean, I know it's like 25, but I mean, he's going to fight at 170, and he's been fighting at 145, and he's been having a great week. He's on YouTube eating breakfast. He's saying he's never felt better, and a lot of guys do when they don't have to do a weight cut. It's a similarly sized matchup, so the weight difference isn't as major, I don't think. Because, I mean, you remember Nate used to fight at 155.
Well, and Nate had better success at 155. Let's remember he was 2-2. I mean, look, the percentages are the same, right? It was essentially 50%. He won half of his bouts at welterweight. He was 2-2. And then when he was at lightweight, which is where he spent most of his career, he's been 16-8. So more successful at lightweight than he was at welterweight. And of course, anyone who's seen him at welterweight remembers when Rory McDonald decided to Chris Benoit him all over the octagon until until he essentially went back to lightweight because he couldn't compete at that thing. That is not what's going to happen this weekend. He does have a slight reach advantage of 2 inches. He has a height advantage of 2 inches, and of course he's fought at that weight class and is clearly comfortable, because as you were alluding to, there was discussion back and forth that 65 was where they were going to land. My guess is that Conor wanted it at 70 because he's been talking all week that if he wins this fight, that Robbie is next.
That's what I love about this guy. Like, he's just going to skip that. He's the featherweight champion. He's going to skip
lightweight.
Lightweight.
Well, and I, you know what, to be honest with you,
Rafael comes back at some point.
I don't blame him because
they don't know when Rafael's coming. And he did break his foot. He didn't just bruise it like Conor said.
But it doesn't matter. Like, I what's interesting is that we're in this position, and I've been saying this all week. I said this last week. If Conor McGregor wins this bout, it changes the entire dynamic of the organization for a couple of reasons. One, you have a guy who's champ at featherweight who may never return back to featherweight to defend said championship.
And that's the main thing. If you remember when we would do fight weeks when Conor's cutting to 145, he hates cutting. Not that a lot of dudes like cutting, but think about a guy who's able to fight at 170 easily, and think about that guy having to lose 25 pounds. These guys are ripped. I mean, these guys are in shape. This isn't me losing 25 pounds.
Sure.
I could lose that a couple times. Like, these guys have to lose 25 pounds to fight. You know, he hated the weight cut. He wanted to jump to 155 essentially immediately because he doesn't want to do the weight cut. That's one of the reasons. He's got 10 other reasons he wants to do it. He wants every division to be the Conor McGregor division. He said he's going to create his own belt. So I don't know if he will or won't get to do that, but it'll be interesting to see.
But you're getting close, okay? So he wins featherweight. He's not anywhere near featherweight right now to defend that. If he beats Nate Diaz, and then he goes to fight Robbie Lawler, and let's say he beats Robbie Lawler, and then let's say he decides at some point that Rafael comes back, he wants that belt too. So now we're going to play complete fantasy here because I'm trying to make a point. He wins all three belts. What I mean by changing the division and the organization is that you now have a fighter in Conor McGregor, and you have a fighter in Nate Diaz, and you have a fighter in Nick Diaz, and likely have a fighter, you could make a case, that Cowboy Cerrone. You have four guys in the organization willing to fight anyone at any weight at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't that get us back to the ideal version of what UFC 1 would have been if it had rules established?
It's certainly closer, and I think more than even the weight divisions and the crossing the weight divisions, it's more about guys not necessarily protecting their position. And Dana White spoke earlier this week on this, that Conor McGregor's a guy that's just willing to fight. He knows that your time in the cage is finite. He knows your time to make money is finite. You know, this is a guy from a working class background. He was a plumber's apprentice. He didn't want a boss telling him when he could or couldn't take a day off. So he knows what hard work is. And he wants to take advantage of this point in his life. He's in his prime right now. He's a guy that knows that, hey, I can make a couple million dollars. God knows what this guy's making. I mean, this guy's making a lot of money. He's got a cut of pay-per-views 6 fights into the UFC. That's amazing.
Sure.
And this is a guy that's he's making the UFC money hand over fist every time he goes out on does an interview or goes into a press conference or does an embedded series. You know, he wants embedded to be on TV. He said that at the press conference yesterday. He's not a fan of those being on YouTube.
Well, and
he thinks he should be on a big screen and you should have to pay every time you see the dude.
Well, let's remember that I don't know that there's another fighter that they did. I mean, Notorious is all about Conor McGregor, and it's essentially a six-part embedded that's just about Conor. I don't think that there's another fighter on the roster that's had a six-part YouTube series that's just him.
And this is what it comes down to. And yes, you can't help injuries, and Rafael Dos Anjos has an injury, but you also have an instance too where Conor. And again, there's going to be differences, and you can be mad about the fact and talk about camps. Conor was willing to fight. This fight was offered to Chad. Chad didn't want it. This fight was offered to Jose Aldo. He didn't want it. I don't know the status of Frankie Edgar. If Frankie was offered the fight,
well, there's two stories, right? Okay. There was the story that it was offered and he didn't want it. Conor says that, Frankie says that he was never offered it and that C stands for Conor. Like, he's mad at the UFC for outing him like that. And look, I don't necessarily disagree if he did say no, that they need to out those guys, specific to Frankie and, I would say, well, all three of them. But look, if Jose Aldo is fighting for the championship or fighting at 55 or whatever, and he just got knocked out like that, you need a camp to do that. There would be nothing worse for Jose Aldo. I promise you this. There would be nothing worse for Jose Aldo to go back in and get knocked out at another division by the same person in 20 seconds.
Well, and I don't disagree, and I was trying to put that caveat out there. I don't disagree with it, but I mean, what you have to do is just look at what actually happened. For whatever reason, this guy turned the fight down, this guy turned the fight down, this guy turned the fight down. We're at 170 now with Nate Diaz, you know, and the thing about the Diaz brothers is, regardless of record, they always generate interest.
Sure.
Those are two dudes that always generate interest, and this has been a very interesting week and a half. I kind of like this compression because I can pay attention to it, too, because remember all the buildup we had for McGregor and Jose Aldo the first time?
That started in January.
It started in January, and we didn't actually get to the fight.
Right, right.
We didn't actually get to the fight. It was kind of hard to pay attention to other things and figure out what's going on, and God, I can't wait to see this, but I'm not really clicking in. I haven't missed a single UFC live stream about this fight that's happened, because there's a sense of immediacy here. There's a sense of this fight's happening. I don't have to worry about this fight not happening. This is all happening. I didn't watch many of the pressers, and I know they went back and forth. I didn't watch many of the pressers with Conor and Rafael because, okay, the fight's a little ways away.
Sure.
This is a little ways away. As soon as Nate Diaz is on board and we're doing pressers and we're talking about it and we're on the phone, everybody's dropping F-bombs. You know, he's telling Nate Diaz to dance for him or else he's going to send him back to 2020. Win and show?
Right.
Come on. This is gold. This is gold. I'm getting yelled at yesterday. I got to go to my kids' music program. Like, I'm like, I don't know, man. This press conference is on. This isn't done yet. I don't know what my kid's doing, but it's not going to be this.
It's not this. No.
And it turned out it wasn't later that night when we actually got.
Spoiler alert. It ended up not being gone.
We got to the school. They were reading a book on stage, which is performing now.
Yes.
See, Conor McGregor's kid would take that book. And he'd whoop somebody's ass with it on stage.
He would, yes.
Yeah. I don't know if he'd be allowed back, though. But that's Conor McGregor. He's the UFC right now. I don't think there's any doubt about it. You could talk about Anderson Silva for the longest time being that guy. You could talk about Chris Weidman was starting to fill that role, obviously took the loss. I mean, undisputed up until she took the big loss, it was Ronda Rousey. But she and Conor were neck and neck there for a while, as big as Ronda was. There's nobody bigger in the UFC right now, which is kind of amazing because they've got the best fighters in the world. They've got Jon Jones starting to kind of mouth off and throw memes up on Twitter and Facebook and do all these things. And Conor McGregor is still the show at this point. So this is going to be very, very interesting to kind of see how things work out here. A lot of people wondering, I saw in Sports Illustrated, that if the UFC isn't putting their chin out in front. And that was for the Rafael Dos Anjos fight. That wasn't even when they were making the dude go up to 170 and fight Nate. And putting their chin out front and saying, hey, do you risk this guy? I don't know. That's one of the most interesting things. Because if he loses to Rafael Dos Anjos, he can talk his way either back into that fight. He's still got the featherweight division to do. A lot of people aren't giving Nate the respect they probably should. I mean, Frankie Edgar mentioned him earlier. He's saying, hey, Nate Diaz has exactly what it takes here to beat a guy like Conor McGregor. He's got that reach. He's got great jiu-jitsu. I mean, all those dudes got great jiu-jitsu. So they get wrapped up on the ground. This isn't wrestling on the ground. This is going to be jiu-jitsu on the ground. I know that Connor started working it in to his training back when he was 20, 22 years old. That's fine. But I feel like there's a different level when you have Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, the way that Nate's rolling, the way that Eddie Alvarez is rolling, the way that he's rolling with Nick and all those dudes, Jake Shields over there. Those guys are kind of a different beast when it comes to that. And if you're going to say there's anything we haven't for sure seen out of Connor yet, would be what's happening on the ground when he's actually rolling around with a guy trying to pull subs, able to do great guard work, and able to be longer than Connor McGregor. Because Connor's usually had that in his favor in a lot of these fights down at 145.
That's for sure. The one thing that I will say that I think a lot of maybe casual fans are glomming onto in comparison to Nick versus Connor is, like, I get it. Nate and Connor.
He said he'll take on both of them.
He probably would.
He'll do it both. That's the ting.
Look, I get that he was choked out with a kind of weak sauce, head and arm choke early in his career.
Mm-hmm.
But let's remember, guys, that he's evolved since then. So, like, I'm not saying at all his jits is Diaz brother jiu-jitsu. What I am saying, though, is it's not Connor's second fight jiu-jitsu.
No, it is not. It is not. But, I mean, we did see a little, we saw those flashes. And, again, if you go back to the show after Mendez and McGregor, where I said this is the most amazing fight we've seen as far as at this level, simply because both guys were able to come out looking great. And I think we were right after that fight. We saw where some of the holes might be for Conor McGregor.
Yep.
That didn't change just because he was able to knock out Jose Aldo in 15 seconds, because we didn't see what could have happened there. Nate's been fighting a lot of bigger dudes. He's got a strong chin. I would venture to say that same punch that he lands on Jose Aldo is probably not going to put Nate down in the same way. It's going to put him down, not necessarily in the same way if he were able to land that type of punch. So this is going to be very interesting to see where it goes from there. Now, Connor's saying, hey, I set the traps. Nobody understands ring generalship like I do. Everybody says they do, but I'm setting traps. I'm making guys go where I want them to do. This isn't a fluke that I knocked this guy out like this. I made him do what I wanted. The same thing with the Chad Mendez fight, he says. So it's whether or not you believe him or not. It's whether or not your perception of these fights, and when you watch these fights, you go, oh, he meant to do that, or a fight's a fight sometimes. Sometimes things just happen. So we'll see a little more on Saturday night. It's going to be interesting. I dare say one of the most interesting dynamics we've had in a fight in years, considering all the variables at play. The championship fight. This reminds me a little bit of when we saw Anderson Silva go up to 205 and take a couple fights here and there. But even then, it wasn't against the guys that anybody thought would be super dangerous against a guy like Anderson Silva.
No.
And that's what's really interesting here is this is a guy where I think he's got really, really dangerous jiu-jitsu. He's tough as all hell. And it's not going to be a situation where if Nate were to win, I would be totally surprised. I think a lot of other people would, because Connor's been the guy that's been showing up every time. And I picked against him almost every time. Nope, this will be the time. This is probably the time. Well, maybe this will be the time. Well, I guess none of these are the time, because he just keeps winning.
So who are you picking?
Oh, God, I don't know.
Come
man.
On, DraftKings is here. They're going to give you money.
DraftKings is here.
Who are you picking?
DraftKings is here. They haven't been put out of business yet by the nanny state.
They have not been put out of business.
Ah, man, I would have to take Connor. I can't. I picked against Connor three times in a row now. I think I picked against him back at the Dennis Seaver fight. And I mean, well, I just thought, I'm like, okay, right. Dennis Seaver, tough dude. Right. I know he beat Poirier, but that's how I think. Think of that. That's two fights ago. He was fighting Dennis Seaver.
Right.
That's two fights ago at this point. This is amazing at this point. This is ridiculous. And
I think that's, that's the game, is that if you're going to beat Conor McGregor, I think you have to beat his brain first. And that's why I think Conor's going to
win.
Like
concussion or mental?
No. I think you're going to have to mentally break him, and you're going to have to mentally break him in the middle of the fight, because he has convinced himself, as you just said, that everything that happens in there is by his sheer will alone.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not able to break him in there, and Nate's jiu-jitsu certainly could break somebody mentally before he subs you. If you're not able to break him, I don't think you beat him.
Yeah, but do you have to do that before? Because, I mean, these press conferences, they've been one-sided. And this isn't a...
No, I think it happens in the fight. If he thinks he's going to do X and it doesn't work, you're chiseling away at mm-hmm. that mental acumen.
And I tell you what, if you're going to take two guys that do that better than anybody, it would be the Diaz brothers in the UFC. That they're the best at, like, okay, you'll hit me. Okay, you might catch me. I'm just boom, 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 boom. And usually that's Nick a little more than Nate, but Nate's done the same thing a couple times. He can just, okay, I'm just going to land a shot. 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 And if that keeps happening and that frustrates Connor and that length is able to get him a little bit, that's the one thing I've noticed. Every time these guys are standing up, every time, you know, I mean, you saw Connor in the weigh-in or the press conference. He's pushing his arm as far out as he can. And Nate didn't need to do that when he was slapping him back.
Right.
He just slapped him back. I mean, I don't want to judge reach and everything with, you know, what's going to be a stage photo that turns into a little bit of a slap fest. I don't know. Was that touch butt, by the way? I don't know if that counts as touch butt or not. But, I mean, it's going to be interesting. It's so interesting. I don't know if I've had more interest going into a fight wondering what the hell's going to happen. Because this really is unprecedented.
And if he, and I'm
25 pound jump, the guy's holding a belt in a division, like you said, he might never fight in again. And he's still got all the cards. Still, every card is his.
And what's interesting is, like I said, if he wins, I really think you see this whole organization shift and people start going. Because one of the things, like you said, lots of fighters protecting their spot.
Yes.
Like, I want to get the title.
And
I
again,
be
I'm
next
not saying that that's what happened with Rafael Dos
no,
Anjos.
No. That's,
there are other guys that, oh, you know what? I got a pull. Oh, I tweaked the knee.
Right.
And they're not going to go take a fight. And I don't think you're ever really going to see that from Conor McGregor. There will be a point in time where something happens. I mean, time catches up with everybody. I don't know if it's soon or later, but that's going to happen to Conor McGregor. And he'll realize, okay, sometimes he's real. But, I mean, there's certainly a middle ground in there between the guy breaking his foot and a guy pulling out of a fight because, well, I want to be 100% when I fight. Well, I'm at this championship level, so I really have to be at 100%.
But I think what I'm saying is, okay, so he wins, right? And then you've got right now, not featherweight because we don't know what's happening at featherweight, but 55, 70, and 85, you've got this locked horns element happening at the top of the division. There's two or three or four guys locked in, and it's really hard to get attention. It's really hard to break in. But if you're – so let's go back and say you're Benson Henderson when he's still in the UFC, and he can't get back up to fight Rafael Dos Anjos because there's all these people in his way.
Mm-hmm.
If he goes up to 170 and beats, let's say, and again, we're going to fantasy matchmake. Let's say he goes up to 170 and he beats Rory McDonald.
Okay.
Right? Now he's in the catbird seat because it would be really hard if today he beats Rory McDonald for you to deny him whichever direction he wanted to go. Because if you're Rafael Dos Anjos and it doesn't work out, if I'm Benson Henderson, I become Chael Sonnen overnight and go, really? I beat the number three guy at 170 and you won't face me, you coward?
Right.
Right? Okay. Well, maybe I'll fight Robbie Lawler. Maybe he's man enough to fight me. I think those changes make this organization way more interesting in a way that...
But are they organizational changes or is this Conor McGregor's attitude? I understand what you're saying. I just don't think these guys can necessarily click that on in their brains right now.
Perhaps,
this is Conor McGregor, because if you would have said, hey, Nate Diaz, Conor McGregor, all these press conferences are going to be awesome. They were awesome, but they weren't what you expected. I guarantee it going in. I bet you thought there was going to be a lot more back and forth.
I did.
And he made Nate Diaz look like he came out of a prep school and didn't know how to handle some guys talking crap. I mean, yeah, he dropped a lot of F-bombs, but that was it. He was handled in there. That was a blowout. That was 50-45, if not a 50-42.
Sure. All I'm saying is you saw this when Chael Sonnen talked his way into a title shot with Anderson Silva, not one time, but two times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as soon as Chael started, that thing started to work, that shtick started to work, everybody tried that shtick.
Yeah, but who can actually do it? You're saying a lot of guys might try it, but they might not have Conor McGregor's attitude for it.
I don't know who can do it, but I do think that between 55 and 70, even though that's 15 pounds, it really feels like a lot of those guys in that ecosystem.
Well, we've talked about that before, that shrinkage
could go back and forth in an interesting way to make interesting fights, not only for themselves in this finite business where you only get X amount of fights, but interesting fights for the fans, especially when you're talking about Fox Sports 1 cards and Fox cards where... You know, as we get past UFC 200,
mm-hmm.
by the way, which nothing is booked. You know, when we get past that, when they use all their cards up.
It'll probably be Connor.
When they use all their cards up to do that event, what are they going to do for the rest of the year? Because as you said 20 minutes ago, the likelihood of us seeing a heavyweight bout by the end of the year, maybe 50-50?
Yeah.
40-60?
I don't even know where we are on that at this point. So...
Is it Stipe Overeem? I have no idea who has the title.
I think Arlovsky's back at the top now. Right, I don't know how he got back there. No. There is one little disappointing part of this when you kind of bring that aspect into it. And I know that, you know, Connor just wanted the fight. Maybe he just wanted to eat his English breakfast. Like, he's been having two breakfasts every day. Dude loves breakfast.
Who doesn't love Brian?
You know, I could take it or leave it.
Okay.
But he wanted to fight at 170. Dana says he's the guy that called it. So I believe Dana White. And Dana said that a couple days before the press conference. And then you could tell yesterday Dana didn't want to get, like, I'm not going to throw either fighter under the bus. One thing that would have been really interesting is if we could have seen this at 165, simply because I think you would have seen a lot more guys go, okay, is this some kind of default meet in the middle kind of division if we want to make fights? Like, oh, cool, I fight at 170, but I can get down to 165. So, you know, in that case, if I'm a guy like, oh, I don't know, Carlos Condit, you know, maybe I want to take on Nurmagomedov because we don't know what's happening down in that division. Or Nurmagomedov wants to take on a guy, but, he's not going to be fighting, I was going to say Nate Diaz, but that doesn't make any sense at this point. But he's not going to be fighting, you know, Donald Cerrone or somebody like that when he's sitting at number 2 and the guy's at 10. But he certainly might want to take on a guy like, you know, Carlos Condit, who's number 4 in the division up from him. And if you've got that 165 catch weight, cool, these guys are both top 5 division, I think that would be something. Not that we couldn't have that, but I think this could have set some type of precedent for that.
And to your point, then that makes it so that Nurmagomedov can stay busy because he's been out for a while, take a fight that doesn't affect his ranking at 55.
No, not at all. But it's because if he loses to Carlos Condit, does anybody think he's a worse fighter?
No.
No.
He went up 10 pounds or 15, but whatever that ends up being, that's what I'm saying.
And like, Carlos Condit's in the quagmire that is the welterweight division right now, which might even get worse if you see a guy like Conor McGregor fight at that weight and then beat somebody at that weight. So this is interesting. So and,
depending on what Cerrone wants to do, I mean, Cerrone and Condit is a really interesting fight if that ever manifests itself. And I know Condit wants title fights, but if you brought both of them to 65 and there's no ramifications, because to be honest with you, if you go back and look at the Alex Oliveira fight, like as soon as Cerrone gets in with somebody who's just going to attack his body at 170, I don't think things are going to go really well for him.
Oh, for sure.
So, you know, he's another guy that has to kind of be inventive in the way that he picks fights here on out, just because of the damage that's clearly in his midsection where he cannot take those punches because his body just powers down. Obviously, the co-main event is the only...
Oh, how big is this fight?
Right.
And how weird and strange and spotlight hogging has it gotten that the woman who beat Ronda Rousey the woman who beat Ronda Rousey taking on the woman that everybody says is like the perfect matchup to take on Holly Holm. I mean, what did Holly get, like 2 questions? Misha Tate didn't get to talk until the end of the press conference yesterday. I think some reporter just threw her a bone, like, oh, Misha Tate hasn't said anything for an hour and a half. And then Misha Tate's answer was like, I don't know, it's just great watching these two, they're insane,
right?
Like, this is a really amazing fight to kind of look at and try to pick apart, because I don't know what's going to happen, because Misha Tate is the one woman, I think, that is basically an uncrowned champion at this point in that division. And by that, I mean she's the person that went in there and kind of has been sharpened so much against Ronda Rousey that once she doesn't have to fight Ronda Rousey, it's going to feel like an easier fight, no matter who it is, even if it's the woman that beat Ronda Rousey. And Dana White also said this week, you know, people are asking him for predictions, like, this wouldn't surprise me at all. For business, he would love if Holly would just sit out. But he understands he can't do that because Ronda's not coming back till at least November, December at this point. Ronda's not even taking fight questions, by the way. Have you heard this?
Which is so stupid.
Which is interesting because, she's not promoting a movie. She's not promoting a TV appearance. She's not promoting WrestleMania. She's promoting EA's fighting game and doesn't want to take fighting questions. So that's going to tell you a lot about her intentions at this point. So you've got a lot going on here. You've got Misha Tate, you know, number 2 in the division behind Ronda. And Dana White said earlier this week, he goes, I don't expect the same fight. He said if there was anything that maybe Ronda didn't understand was maybe you have to not play into somebody else's game. But she's just that alpha type. She's that fighter who'll do anything. She's a lot like Conor McGregor, where she's going to go in and I don't care if you're a boxer, I'm going to try to outbox you. She got her ass whipped for it.
I disagree a little bit. I think, and we talked about this probably 7 months ago or 8 months ago, I think Ronda Rousey is an amazing athlete in a division that's in its infancy.
But she still went in there and tried to outbox a boxer.
Which is stupid. right? So what the difference between her and Conor McGregor, in my estimation, is I think Conor's fight IQ and Conor's patience is off the chain.
That was just more of a reference point there where Conor's going to take the fight. I understand what
but
you're saying.
Conor is going to look at the situation and adapt. And this is what Miesha Tate did in the second fight with Ronda Rousey that went to the third round, right? She's a little bit more patient. She doesn't run in and do what every other woman did prior to Holly Holm with Ronda Rousey, which is play exactly into the thing that Ronda can do, which is touch hips, dump you on your head, and rip your arm off.
Well, and I, you know, we said this after that last Tate-Rousey fight. I thought in that fight, you know, Miesha Tate had the perfect plan. I think she fought a smarter fight. She was just beaten by a much more talented fighter at that point. And a fighter, too, who hadn't been worn down by movies and appearances and carrying the weight of the UFC on her shoulders and getting body paint, you know, spreads done for Sports Illustrated. So I think she was just beaten by a much more talented fighter, not necessarily a fighter that I think it was proven later that had a fight IQ like she does. So this will be a very much more tactical fight than I think we saw Holly Holm versus Ronda Rousey. And I think Miesha Tate might be up to the challenge here, which is really going to piss Dana White off, because that is money if he can get that rematch done. But it doesn't look like Ronda Rousey is in any hurry to make that happen at this point. So you've got to move ahead in the division.
Do you think she comes back? I mean, I know that we're getting off the topic.
No, obviously. We're not, because this is the overall overarching storyline here. I don't know if she comes back or not. Dana did say earlier this week, this is the first time I've heard a date, which is November, December. So that's why Holly is obviously getting this fight. Now, I made this point months ago. I said, you wait for the fight if it's in July. If it's after July, don't wait. It's well after July, so she got to fight when she wanted to, which is right around, she said March initially, and she got to land right in March. So she's getting to fight when she wants to. You've got to make your champions happy, too. You got to let them make a call. But, I mean, Miesha Tate, man, out of all these divisions where you look at these number two fighters, she's probably the most dangerous at this point. And she's really, I mean, she's been the person that Ronda Rousey has helped sharpen into probably one of the best fighters in the division. Because if it's not Ronda Rousey or Kat Zingano, she's not had a loss in what, 4 years? 5 years?
Not a loss in 4 years. Has obviously beat...
6 years.
6 years.
Wow.
Sorry, yes. Has not had a loss in...
If it's not Kat or Ronda,
yeah,
six years. That's pretty amazing. And the leap she made in just those fights is also amazing. So this is going to be very interesting. Because a lot of people, it was 50-50 when she took on Jessica Eye. And that wasn't even close. That wasn't even close. And that was a smart fight, too. That was a decision where she knew what she had to go in and do, and she did it. So this fight's going to be really interesting. I mean, obviously, if Holly Holm can land some punches, she's got the striking. We know that at this point. Miesha Tate's going to have to get in there close, and we're going to get to see a little more from Holly Holm, how she kind of handles those situations, which is very interesting considering she laid such a beating on Ronda. We don't really know how she's going to react if somebody sets up a good takedown attempt.
Well, and I was talking to a friend of mine who's really, really into boxing, and we were talking about this fight, and I said, the most interesting part about this fight for me is twofold. One that you've been saying, because I think Miesha Tate's fight IQ is awesome, and I think her patience should pay dividends on Saturday night. Two, there's always that possibility that Holly Holm, if you look at her fights in the UFC, none have been as impressive as the Ronda Rousey fight, right? So we could get to the point where you have the reverse Miesha Tate, right? Miesha Tate has been sharpened by fighting Ronda Rousey but never able to best her. Could Holly Holm be Gustafson, right? It's a different fighter when he steps up for these ginormous fights.
Yes.
But then when you bring him back down, he gets beat by Rumble Johnson, or he gets beat by Glover.
The one difference clearly there is that she's got the belt. And
correct.
That's always going to heighten the stakes and always keep the pressure on, so to speak, and make you, you know, theoretically work your best. Like, you know, every fight's a championship fight. There's no nights off where you're third down on the card or you're opening up the fight pass card or doing anything like that. Holly Holm's going to be co-main no matter what she does. She's co-main on the Conor McGregor card, even though we're hardly talking about it simply because it's the Conor McGregor card. So I don't know if that's going to get into her head at all or simply be a situation. I think the more dangerous thing than that is simply the fact that Ronda Rousey didn't go in there with the best game plan. She was able to beat Ronda very handily. And we still, all the things we said going into the Ronda Rousey fight are still true. She hasn't looked that impressive. How's she really going to handle things when she's on the ground? She didn't look too great against, who was it, Marion Renault?
Yes.
Renault. I don't know. I'm not making fun of her name. I just, she didn't look impressive in that fight.
It was not a great
fight. She got
the
title fight, and everybody's like, oh, this is over now. This is just another Ronda romp. And so all those things we were saying going into the Ronda fight didn't necessarily become untrue because of that performance, as you were pointing out. I don't know if it's the Gustafsson big fight mentality where he would show up at the big fight and then kind of play down to his competition. If that's the case, that's not going to be a worry with Misha Tate because she's one of the best in the world in that division. She's gotten better and better and better. And she's pretty hot, too. I don't know if anybody's... I just was watching the open workouts.
Your love affair with Misha Tate is...
They were open.
Literally,
I told you this years ago.
Oh, no, that's what I was saying.
I called it years ago. I said, look, everybody's talking about Ronda, but
your love affair with her is like my favorite thing right now. But the one...
Don't,
you know,
tell her. She'll whoop my ass.
I won't. The one thing that I really do look forward to, though, is if we go back and we look at the Wonderboy Thompson fight with Johnny Hendricks. Okay, Wonderboy and Holly Holm both do something really spectacular that's very similar. Their ability to hide the kicks with the punches, I think, could be the thing that catches Misha Tate in a way that Ronda Rousey has never done, nor has anyone else that Misha Tate has fought. And by that, I mean, there's no hiccups. There's no, you don't see the hip turning before the leg comes. The leg is at your head. When
you thought a punch was
when
coming.
When it fires, right? So to me, that's the thing that Misha Tate's going to have to be on the lookout for and adapt to, and I'm sure she's training for it, but that's the X factor in Holly Holm, that if she comes out and looks like she did against Ronda, her ability to hide those kicks could be the thing that absolutely makes it that she runs away with this fight in round one or round two.
Yeah, and I that wouldn't surprise me, but... To look at this fight, this is a very interesting fight. You know, this is Misha Tate's opportunity, too. She's got to be... This reminds me of Daniel Cormier. Just couldn't beat Jon Jones. But we had that chance to go after that title and not have to fight Jon Jones. He went out and he just took it.
Yep.
He just went out and took it, and I'm going to take this now. You're going to have to come back at me to get it, John.
Nightmare scenario for the UFC, though. Nightmare scenario.
A bit of a nightmare scenario, but still, they'll still be able to sell the fight. But they might... And Dana's been... as the UFC, I'd much rather sell a Ronda-Holly rematch. But... Holly's the champion. She's a fighting champion. She wants to fight. Misha's earned this fight again. So that's what we're going to do here.
And she's older, right? Like she's
yes.
not. She's not.
Oh, yeah. She didn't want to wait. And that's why we talked. I mean, hell, we talked about that a lot right after the fight in the rematch and this and that. And I said, well, she's got to wait because she's going to make more money. And I know that seems counterintuitive being 34. But if she would wait, she'd make more money. But she can't wait this long. And everything kind of fell where it should with this. And it's just going to be interesting to see if Ronda's ever coming back. She's kind of that shadow that's going to be hanging over this fight as we get into things on Saturday night.
All right, you got time to talk Anderson Bisping?
Yeah, we want to do that next.
I do, yes. So obviously Saturday night, we had our very first spotlight.
Wait, there's just one giant segment now? We don't give people like a pee break or anything?
No, not really. Okay, we just keep going.
Right. Just take the phone into the bathroom with you and just keep listening.
Yeah, just keep going.
Just don't tell us you do it. That'll freak me out.
It was the first, I'll call it spotlight card for Fight Pass, where you had one fight that was drawing everybody in. I mean, there were a lot of great fighters on the Fight Pass.
But I spent my $10.
You probably didn't know any of them.
That should say a lot. Well, that's what those have to be if they're going to be anything.
Totally. But the main event, of course, was Anderson Silva and Michael Bisping in a crazy card for the ages. A fantastically fun fight to watch. But
as interesting as the fight between Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz is, as interesting as that fight became with all of the things surrounding the third round and what's happening here and who's doing more damage and enough with the like water stuff because you're not landing any punches. So does that count for scoring? If you're Silva fan, sure. Anderson, you know, for those of you that are friends with both of us.
I'm going to it right now.
My favorite thing is Silva fan scoring, you know. Gets hit in the head four times, dodges three punches. Silva up 10-0.
Right.
Yeah, that was a frustrating part of that fight. First question, do you agree with the decision?
Absolutely, 100%.
Really? See, I wasn't sure if you and I would agree on this.
100%. Here's where, you know, my only struggle, and I'll read this Anderson scoring thing in a second. My only struggle is I'm still, after watching the fight four times, I'm still trying to figure out what in the F happened in the third round. Like, I do not know what is going on in either fighter's mind. And here's what I mean by that is, so if you didn't watch the fight, spoiler alert, there is an exchange between Michael Bisping and Anderson Silva where Michael Bisping's mouthpiece falls out.
Yes.
And they're still engaged. The ref does nothing. Mm-hmm. For some unknown reason, Michael Bisping turns his head and drops his hands and looks at John McCarthy.
No, it was Herb Dean, wasn't it?
Herb Dean, sorry. Looks at Herb Dean as if Herb's supposed to stop and put the mouthpiece in. When that happens, Anderson flies across the ring with his knee and cracks Michael Bisping with a flying knee, knocking him to the canvas.
1 second left in the round.
Anderson does nothing at that point except for run to the cage and celebrate his win.
Oh, he goes down on his knees first because Jesus.
But doesn't finish the fight, right?
No.
Goes down on his knees, goes to the top. The round ends. His camp runs in and celebrates. And Herb's like, what in the hell is going on? I never stopped this fight.
Herb, I thought there was one mistake there, and I know that the other angle showed what he was actually doing is when Bisping looked over, Herb takes a step toward them. And I think Bisping thought they weren't engaged at that point. I just want to kind of clarify your timeline
but
there.
There was no timeout is what
no,
I mean.
No, no,
they
no,
weren't
no.
fighting,
no,
but
no.
they were not.
But there was obvious engagement as they worked their way to the side of the cage a little bit. I think they worked over like three or four panels on the octagon. And then there was that moment where kind of Bisping looked over and you see Herb take a stutter step in. I think at that point, Mike thought he was going to get his mouthpiece back. And he did what he shouldn't have done, and he admitted it later. Protect yourself at all times. That's the first rule all the time. And he thought that he was going to get his mouthpiece back, and he was trying to like, hey, I want my mouthpiece back. And that's not necessarily something that's wrong to ask for, but you need to protect yourself. In that instance, Anderson lands the knee to the face. Doesn't knock him out cold by any means.
No.
Doesn't do anything afterwards but start to celebrate. I mean, he's tried to do this before in fights. And he's been successful usually because it's in the middle of the round. The round just ends. And Herb Dean was as calm as he could be, saying, hey, fight's not over, fight's not over. There were some language obvious disparities there with some of the folks. You know, they were trying to keep people out of the cage. Dana White was, you could tell he was very grateful if you watch his post-fight comments that didn't get a lot worse. It wasn't good by any means.
No.
But it could have gotten a lot worse. And by not good by any means, one of the main things I thought that really might have influenced perceptions, and I'm glad it didn't, was the fact that Michael Bisping didn't get any cut work done during that break. There was no cut work done on the fact that he ate that knee at the end of the round.
Right.
So he starts the fourth round with basically a towel off. There's no icing of it. There's none of the whatever they can put
Vaseline
in there.
Or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, whatever they can put in the cuts and things like that. So I thought that could have been a big turning point in this fight. Is like Anderson Silva jumps on top of the cage, and it's such a mess in there. Basically, Michael Bisping gets back to his corner and just has to stand there because they're trying to keep – they don't know who to let in or who not to let out.
Right.
Somehow,
right.
All of Anderson's dudes are in there, and his guys essentially didn't get in there. They didn't get to do any real work because there was no minute between rounds as in a normal end of the round because there were all these people in the cage.
They're clearing everybody out.
So, yeah, Bisping didn't get any cut work done, and he still comes out, and in my opinion, I believe he won the fourth round. Doesn't matter how much Anderson moved around, how much Bruce Lee crap he pulled in the cage. It just, he wasn't landing shots, and Michael Bisping was, and that's how you score a fight.
Yes.
And I was really surprised, and this could have been, I forget who's doing the announcing for the UK, but he was talking about the adrenaline dump.
It was Dan Hardy, and
Dan Hardy made the comment.
I never know who the other guy is.
Dan Hardy made the comment about, wow, this could really affect this next round, because Anderson Silva goes from thinking he won a fight. I think he was trying to make everybody think he won the fight. I think he was a little more involved there than some people are saying because he's done this before and he knows how to play the game. But you go from, oh, I won the fight to, oh, I got to fight the next round. And I'm looking at that next round and going, that had to be it because he didn't do anything to finish that fight at the beginning of the fourth, which I think he might have had a chance to do. Bisping wasn't out. Bisping was not intelligently defending himself because there was nothing to defend himself against.
No,
and Herb Dean said that.
Because he ran away.
Right, exactly. If the guy's not throwing a punch, the guy doesn't have to defend himself. What am I going to stop the fight for? So there were a lot of things at play there. There were a couple mistakes made. I think the main mistake was probably Michael Bisping's, and he's lucky it didn't cost him that fight. And, you know, in that fourth round, he fought through it. I thought he won the round. Dana White, for some reason, thought they were even going into the fifth. I'm still trying to figure out how that was the case.
I actually think if you go back and watch the fifth, and I'm not arguing for changing the score, but I think if you go back and watch the fifth, Anderson wins that one by a hair. Like,
yeah, I thought it was close.
It's not like he blows that one out of the water.
No, he was able to land a little more, and he was able to do a little more in that round. I just thought it was really interesting because you and I were able to – we picked up that fight in the third, and we're like, oh, man, look, he's tearing – oh, no, it was the fourth.
It was the fourth because we didn't see that originally.
Yeah, we didn't see that. We're like, oh, he must have been beating the crap out of him because that's what it looks like. And then we're like, oh, well, he might win this round. I don't know what's going on. Oh, maybe Anderson's way ahead because you and I did not see the fight until the fourth round.
Right.
And then they raised Bisping's hand. We're like, okay, we got to rewind this, figure out what the hell happened. We had no idea because we saw – they remember they replayed the kick during the break between 4 and 5.
Yes, and so we
saw that, and we were trying to figure out what was illegal about that. Was his hand down? Did Herb Dean call the fight?
Right.
We couldn't figure it out.
We were, to set some context, we were out to dinner.
We didn't have any sound.
And we had no sound, so we have no context at all. We were just seeing images of what this is.
Right,
and trying,
in the fourth round.
And trying to figure out what the hell's going on.
Right, and we're looking at him like, I thought we knew what was going on in MMA, but I can't figure out, was that illegal? Was he trying to do something there? Oh, is his mouthpiece out? Was he giving, yeah, so it was very strange. You know, I thought the decision was right. And I wouldn't mind seeing a rematch. I'm a guy who's never been the biggest Bisping fan, but I mean, the guy's been doing it over and over and over again. And, you know, he just beat Anderson Silva. And this shows you where Anderson Silva is. And I don't mean that as disrespectful, but this goofing around in the cage, which really turns a lot of people off. The same friend we were with that night, he's still turned off from Anderson Silva in Abu Dhabi years ago.
So we were out to dinner with a friend.
He's like, I don't want to watch that guy. He's dancing around all the time.
Who's watching this, and he literally says to us, and he does not consume it in the way that we consume it. So he's probably...
He's a fan, though.
A fan, but has not watched every fight since the Abu Dhabi fight. He literally turns to us, and he goes, this is the same garbage. He never finishes fights. He does all this garbage all the time. And we're like, well, dude, that's not exactly what he does, but I get why you're perceptive.
But he's doing it again.
Because he's doing it right now.
Right. And again, feints don't score points.
So here is, if you like to know how the Silva fan scoring goes, this is what would have happened in the fight on Saturday night. Silva backs up, circles away, moves arms, 5 points Silva. Silva gets punched in the face 4 times, but dodges 3 other attempts, 20 points Silva.
20 points.
Opponent, nothing. Silva gets taken down, gets to the ground, pounded out, opponent, zero, Silva, 3 points.
Well, Silva, he was able to get out of it on the ground. That's worth
Silva
3 points,
gets back up, 50 points. End result, Silva wins 78-0. Silva, Silva, Silva.
And I've got a lot of respect for the dude. And I love that he's got kind of this, you know, attitude going in, this like water attitude. But at a certain point, you got to land a punch.
But here's what, let me clarify this as somebody who has been a fan and loved Bruce Lee since he was 6 years old. Like, Bruce Lee did not teach you to move your arms for no reason, causing no damage. Bruce Lee's whole premise would be to finish the fight as quickly as possible so nothing happens to you. If you have the skill sets to end the fight, end the fight. There's no showboating. There's none of that stuff. I mean, there was showboating in the movies, but the whole premise of the art form is just to end the fight.
Well, and even if it's distraction and you want to be in somebody's head and you want to use your legacy and the fact that you're Anderson Silva, you've still got to do something with it. I don't even have a problem with the waving of the arms, and some people do. I don't have a problem with any of that. But you can't say you're winning the fight just because you were able to duck your head in and out and wave your arms
and
around.
I don't have a problem with it either until you're going to try and tell me that that's some sort of Bruce Lee thing that you would do when you don't actually follow it up with anything.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I will say that if you're not following the fighter and the kid or Brendan Schaub individually, you should change that right now because on Saturday night, he had quite honestly the best tweet I have seen for the fight, which he said the following. If you thought that Anderson Silva was going to win a decision against Michael Bisping in the O2 arena, you believe in dragons and movement coaches.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Snoop Dogg does.
Right.
Game of Thrones is real, yo.
It is totally real. And then if you listen to Fighter and the Kid this week, he had to apparently spend Sunday morning defending himself against grown men who were trying to tell him that dragons were in fact real. Because the internet.
All right, can we be done with this episode?
Yeah,
we
can be.
Do you want thoughts on one more thing?
I just wanted to really quickly talk about in the press that was happening this week, Lorenzo Fertitta came out and said that he sees a day when the UFC will be in the Olympics. And I just want to go on record. We don't need to do, I mean, we're already at 50 minutes, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. I just want to go on record and say there is a 0% chance that's ever going to happen. An absolute 0% chance.
How is there a 0% chance that fighting would be in the Olympics?
0%.
We've got like 80 other versions of it.
Zero.
This would just be kind of putting them all together.
I'm telling you, zero.
There's boxing.
I want to go
if
on.
If there was no boxing, I'd agree with you.
There's
like,
boxing,
oh, they don't want
with,
people
there's
to
boxing
hit
with headgear.
Okay, well, we put some headgear on some guys. Let them wear the...
I'm sure that's what Lorenzo's talking about, is like modifying the sport to be wearing headgear
and
16-ounce gloves and shin pads.
I don't think it's soon, but never say never. Why are you so sure? No.
Zero. If you want to talk about jiu-jitsu, okay, maybe we can talk about jiu-jitsu. But if we don't, and I'll say this to modify my answer. If I see jiu-jitsu, maybe we can talk. But until I see jiu-jitsu or some sort of submission wrestling that, you know, is in the Olympics. That
I
is,
don't know. I could see freestyle fighting of some sort being in the Olympics before jiu-jitsu even.
Zero.
So rather than adding these components, you go, oh, we're going to have a new freestyle fighting category.
Zero.
Okay. All right.
All right. Follow along. Weigh-ins are tonight.
It doesn't matter. They're all going to get like typhoid down in Brazil this year, swimming in that water, and there's not going to be any more Olympics.
they're swimming, getting sick in the water, then getting Zika virus out of the water. It's
right, exactly.
Terrible, terrible time. Okay. Follow along all weekend long as we score the fights. The King, Mystic Mac, takes on Nate Diaz, and of course, Misha Tate and Holly Holm. Lots of other great fights.
Is there
fights.
Any other fight on
there's
that card?
Lots of great.
This is a waste. They should save these fighters because everybody's buying the damn thing anyways. It's,
well, I mean, it is because if you look at the card, let me pull it up real quick so we can go through it before we take off. But if you look at the card, like there's great fights on this card.
And I'm not saying you don't put great fights on. I'm just saying, wow, what a way. I mean, I'm buying this. You can put Dada 5000 back on TV. I'm still buying this.
So you got Amanda Nunes is fighting. You've got.
You probably need that there, though, for what's going to go might happen in the division.
You've got Brandon Thatch and Badr Zada. They're keeping Fight Pass really interesting. That's where you get the Diego Sanchez Jim Miller fight, which is going to be awesome. Mm-hmm. So there's some awesome fights on here to get people tuned in, which, to be fair, I'm with you that you might want to hold back on some of them because I don't think you need it.
Yeah, no, that especially when you've got all these other cards to fill out. But, hey, you got to make Fight Pass worth something, I guess.
And you've got Vellante and Latifi in the third spot on the main card. Tom Lawler is fighting, and like I said, Nunes is fighting. So some great fights this weekend. We'll score all of them on Twitter and on Facebook. Just search WOW Show. Have an amazing weekend. We'll talk next week. It's Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show.